Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Quantum Spirituality on DreamVision 7 RadioNetwork.com, the show where past spiritual wisdom and present-day science merge to show us our future. Your host is Peter Canova, author of the 25-time award-winning book series, The First Souls Trilogy, available on Amazon, and Peter's website, petercanova.com. That's PeterCanova.com. This show is a live video, so if you're only listening and want to watch, go to Peter's website, petercanova.com. PeterCanova.com, where you can access his Facebook page to leave comments or questions. And click the D7RN link, where you can receive a free gift video.
Good evening, friends, followers, and listeners. I'm Peter Canova, 25-time award-winning author of Pope Annalisa and the First Souls Trilogy, and I'm your host on Quantum Spirituality on Dream Visions 7 radio and TV network. Quantum Spirituality is the place where the past and the present merge to tell us about our future. Now, I always encourage everybody to go and look at the archives and view the first three episodes, because it's there we give a very comprehensive audio-visual presentation on the topic that this show is really about, which is consciousness, from where it comes, what it is, and how it operates in our lives. And if you go to my website, petercanova.com, PeterCanova.com, that's where you can access the archived episodes. And you'll also be able to see a number of articles, blogs, and videos on a variety of interesting topics related to this show. I think we have a really good show lined up for you tonight. And really, without any further delay, let's get right to it and enjoy. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Quantum Spirituality. We have an interesting show lined up for you tonight. We're going to finish off our series on consciousness. And then a little later on, we're going to have a fantastic guest tonight, Reverend Dr. Temple Hayes from Unity Campus of St. Petersburg. She's an amazing woman who worked her way through a lot of hardship to come to a great place in consciousness, where she not only helped herself, but she's embarked on a career of helping a lot of other people. And I think you're going to find it really worthwhile to hear what Dr. Temple has to say. So let's get on with the show tonight. Hope you enjoy, and we'll be back shortly with our guest after this next segment.
An increasing number of people, from Tesla's Elon Musk to prominent quantum physicists and other scientists, are coming to believe that we could be living in a virtual reality. It sounds pretty trippy and fantastic, but the weight of the facts makes a compelling case.
In previous shows, we discussed the holographic universe theory, the idea that our world resembles a giant holographic image. Today, we're going to study the fascinating case behind the picture. No pun intended.
Let's start with a bit of history of how the holographic universe concept came into being. A hologram is information encoded on a 2D flat surface or medium that is projected out as 3D images. There is more to it than that, involving light and interference patterns, but we're going to keep it simple. With the rise of quantum physics as a branch of science in the early 20th century, a picture of connectedness began to emerge at the quantum level that creates the world we live in. Things like electrons knowing each other's actions at the equivalent of light years apart are some of the things we cited in previous shows, indicating an invisible field may be an operation that is the medium binding matter and energy together.
In the 1970s, neuroscientist Carl Priebram's work suggested that the human brain operates in a holographic manner to produce 3D perceptions. Physicist David Bohm indicated a deeper reality in operation he called the implicate order. The sum of their work formed a theory concerning consciousness as a holographic energy function. The later work of a number of physicists studying black holes, like the one in back of me, indicated that the universe itself may be a cosmic holographic projection. Incidentally, you're witnessing history. I'm the only person ever to survive a close encounter with a black hole.
In the movie The Matrix, underlying reality was mathematical information delivered in energy streams. Now, let's get into some specifics to understand the basis behind the matrix or virtual reality. Much of the material I'll be discussing today tracks a lecture by Dr. Richard Epp given at the Perimeter Institute for Physics in Canada. What I've done is to break it down to be understandable for the average person and cast it into a more coherent theory of reality that is reinforced by ancient mystic wisdom. This was no small task, and at times I practically had to inject myself with coffee for enough energy to wrap my mind around this information so that I could communicate it to you coherently. But I recovered, so here we go. The first thing is that we need to start off with three basic facts from quantum physics expressed as formulas. The first formula is E equals HF, or Planck's equation, which is the very foundation of quantum physics. In plain language, this reveals that the light we use to perceive objects comes from a shower of particles called photons. Light and photons are generated by the action of electrons moving around atoms. A photon is therefore a form of electromagnetic energy. So light or electromagnetism forms all that exists at the subatomic level, which in turn forms the visible world. Light is radiated, transmitted, and absorbed in discrete energy packets called photons or quanta. It's the basis for all we perceive and experience. The discovery of quanta of light is where the whole science of quantum physics started. It's all about light, folks. And remember how we were told God is light in all the religious and spiritual texts? Now, imagine the sphere in back of me is the master source of all light. It spins off infinite amounts of sub-frequencies of light. So the individuality of the photons or the quanta of light are determined by their frequency or particular radiation or vibration. But these frequencies, these numerous infinite frequencies, are variations of the one constant energy. And that energy is a frequency that's found in nature, that has been identified and found in nature, called Planck's constant. Planck's constant is the base energy, and all other light frequencies are variations of that energy. Now, this is a direct analog to what we told you in previous shows about a master or fundamental consciousness that spins off individual points of conscious frequencies, such as human minds or human souls.
You can hit the rewind button if you had trouble following anything, but here's the single takeaway I want you to focus on. Bodily existence and physical objects are the variations of a master frequency of light expressed as solid, individualized appearances. The second important equation is Einstein's E equals mc squared, which tells us that matter and energy are interchangeable. This links quantum light energy to matter because matter is made of energy and it resolves back into energy. The simple takeaway from this, light is physical as well as being energy. Matter is energy as well as being physical. Matter and light energy are the same things. This is the third key formula. It reveals that information contains matter and energy and specifically shows how much information or mass an object can contain. It was derived from studying black holes, but it reveals some shocking facts about reality in general. You need to understand some important things about the nature of information. In its common usage, people think of it as an abstract concept. It's just knowledge, thoughts, or ideas after all, but that's a fundamental misconception. Science has a much more precise and realistic definition of information. Information is not abstract. In our last show, we told you that energy contains directive information, which is a hallmark of consciousness. Scientifically speaking, all mass and energy contain information, and it must be embodied in one physical form or another. For an example,
a woman may have a thought in her mind. She can write it out on paper which is a physically embodied form of paper and ink molecules, or she can type her ideas into a computer. The information stored in computer systems is no more abstract than the writing on a piece of paper. It is created by concrete physical processes. The computer operates off a binary system of storing strings of ones and zeros that are translated as intelligible information onto the screen. The sequences are delivered by electrical currents flowing through transistors, which is a physical process, and the information on the screen is nothing more than a molecular representation, just like the handwriting on a piece of paper. So what she's really doing is putting her thoughts out over the internet, which is merely a collection of fiber optic cables and other physical means, so that the information is carried by photons of light or quanta and embodied on those media. Okay, you might say, but what about the actual thoughts in her head? Aren't those just abstract notions? No, they're not. The thoughts in her head are movements of energy encoded in physical neurons and dendrites and electrochemical physical reaction within the brain's neural network. All of this is a physical process. To illustrate the importance science places on the reality of information, look at this quote by noted physicist Jacob Bekenstein. "Likewise, a century of developments in physics has taught us that information is a crucial player in the physical systems and processes. Indeed, a trend is to regard the physical world as made up of information with energy and matter as incidentals."
Matter and energy are incidental. Pretty interesting statement. Kind of like saying that matter and energy are the delivery systems for consciousness, which is information. If you remember on previous shows, we said that consciousness is directed information that creates and permeates all existence from a pebble to a human being. We are nothing more than bundles of information expressed as energy and matter, given different forms according to the frequency of the energy that's present. So now we're going to relate all this knowledge back to why we may be living in a holographic universe. Let's take the example of a sphere. We're going to inject that sphere with information consisting of light photons, like the little bubbles you see in the sphere in back of me. Remember that information is physical, so that photons are information carriers, having both energy and mass. Now, there's a limit to how much information can be crammed into any sphere's area before it collapses in on itself and it becomes a black hole, not a desirable circumstance. But the definition of any given thing is the information contained within its area, whether it's our bodies, our world, or our universe. The definition of anything, again, is the information contained within, describing that thing. So, if all objects or systems are the sum of the information contained within their areas, then how do we define an area? Well, there's a scientifically proven unit of measurement found in nature that defines every area. It's called a Planck area. It's a series of minute two-dimensional Planck areas that envelop and define any given object or system, like the surface area of the sphere depicted in this grid. You have to remember that area is a flat two-dimensional geometric measurement, like the quilt work of Planck areas peppering the sphere in back of me. It's the volume inside the sphere that's three-dimensional. But here's where things get really startling. Physics has found that the amount of information you can cram into a given area is proportional to the area, not to its volume. All that information we crammed into the sphere is not inside the 3D volume of the sphere. It's in the two-dimensional surface area. Now, I want you to really get this. It's like saying the water isn't really in the bucket. It's actually outside on the surface of the pail. So, say that the sphere of the Earth here represents the universe, not just the Earth, but the entire universe. If we apply what we just learned, it means that everything inside the universe, including us, our activities, the things we experience around us, are not directly in the 3D world that we experience, but rather they're a projection of a cosmic 2D movie screen. In effect, you can see that what we think of as the physical world is painted on the surface and projected inward. But this two-dimensional surface area contains three-dimensional information, just like a holographic image, which is exactly the way a holographic image works. It basically starts off as a two-dimensional flat representation that's illuminated by light in certain ways as to project out
three dimensions.
This is why many are postulating that we live in a simulated virtuality of a holographic universe. So reality is bits of information living on the surface area of a space surrounding a volume.
Now, some of you might feel like that just doesn't add up. It just doesn't jive with what seems to be. It's counterintuitive to what I see, feel, smell, and taste. So how do we account for this? Remember on previous shows, we demonstrated that consciousness is intelligent energy containing directive information coming from somewhere beyond our sensory perceptions. This conscious energy permeates and, more importantly, causes all physical space, time, and reality. Now, I'm going to read a little quote from the King James Version of the Bible from the book of Genesis. "And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters." Now, if only a void existed, what waters did God move upon? Well, water is the metaphor for waves, and energy propagates in waves. So God, or consciousness, moved as waves of energy and information creating what we experience, not moving as waves across physical water. This is the way the ancients would have described such a complex and mystical phenomenon as the creation. They would use the metaphors of things of common everyday experience to themselves. Science gives us a new way to look at things. But we said in previous shows, and we've just reemphasized, that consciousness and life are variations of a master consciousness or frequency. And we are like tributaries of the master stream of consciousness, each contributing to the network of intelligent information that forms the creation. We are co-creators or sub-creators in effect. This is what the ancients told us. This is the direct scientific analog that you've heard today to that ancient spiritual wisdom, such as the Hindus and Gnostic seers who said that God worked through its emanated spiritual beings to project and shape the visible world. The world, as the Hindus have said, is the great dream of a playground in which God fools itself. This holographic concept that we've learned today supports ancient mystical wisdom that stated that the entire phenomenal world is a projection or dream of a universal consciousness that has been called God, among other names. Once you realize you're an active component in the matrix that projected our virtual reality of a world, once you remember that your higher self is projecting this dream, then you can use conscious energy to modulate your perception of reality and therefore your experience of reality.
The First Souls Trilogy, one of the most highly awarded fictional independent book series on the market, is a grand vision of human evolution. It chronicles the first spirit consciousness to enter the material world in three page-turning novels that introduce a new paradigm of reality based on genuine ancient wisdom and quantum science. These inspirational thrillers will force you to rethink the nature of the world in which we live. Visit the PeterCanova.com website for information and ordering. In a world facing annihilation, a miraculous African nun rises to become the first female pope through a web of war, murder, and betrayal. Loved by some, hated by many, she becomes the deadly target of Islamic terrorists and her own cardinals as she introduces a new vision that will either save humanity or accelerate its destruction. Four people must race against a nuclear holocaust to learn her astonishing secret. Pope Annalisa is available at petercanova.com, Amazon, and other online booksellers and bookstores worldwide.
Why are we here? How can we be happy? Questions asked from millennials to boomers. Crappy to Happy, sacred stories of transformational joy, answers them using true stories of grit, grace, and love. James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy, wrote in the foreword, "This book is a seminar about emerging truths and offers grounded solutions through the art of the comeback." Dr. Bernie Siegel, a contributing author, wrote, "Bodies die, but spirits and consciousness survive and recycle." So, grab some tissues, open your book, and prepare to cry and laugh till it heals. Crappy to Happy by Reverend Ariel Patricia and Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. Available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksellers worldwide.
How did life start on Earth, and why is there so much suffering? Are we living in a simulated reality like the characters in the Matrix movie? Do parallel dimensions exist alongside ours, influencing our experience? What are the mysterious dark energies that penetrate our universe? Peter Canova folds space and time to bring the twin bookends of ancient wisdom and quantum science into a single focal point, answering these and many other deep mysteries of the creation. Quantum Spirituality can be heard every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern and 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. See the show where past and present merge to show us our future.
This is Dream Vision 7 radio network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Well, I hope you all enjoyed the last segment on consciousness, where we kind of tied up a series of instructional videos on the subject of consciousness. So right now, I want to get on and have you meet our special guest today, Reverend Dr. Temple Hayes. Temple Hayes has become one of the most prominent national figures in the New Thought movement. She's an inspirational author, speaker, and teacher of spiritual consciousness. Temple's life story is really educational for all of us. Rejected by her family at an early age for being what she was, Temple had to overcome alcoholism, among other problems, to become the leader and the inspiration for so many others that she is today. So, you know, that's the official introduction. But now I want to tell you a little bit more about Temple Hayes, because she happens to be a personal friend. Several years ago, when I was on a national speaking tour, my PR agent, Steve Allen, booked me at a location in St. Petersburg, Florida, which happened to be the Unity campus there. And there was a beautiful lady I met there named Temple Hayes. And I got to know her. She was very kind and welcoming. And I got to know her over the years. Actually, we kept in touch and communicated, and have gotten closer over that time. And what I really want to tell you, and I don't want to embarrass Temple by being too personal about this, but she is one of the most genuine people I have ever met in my life. With all the success that she has achieved in becoming almost like a poster woman for the New Thought movement, nothing about this has distorted her desire and her vision for helping people. She's not in it for the fame or the notoriety. That's really something that's incidental, something that she uses as a platform to reach as many people as possible. But I know her, and I know that she just has a tremendous feeling for people, maybe because of what she's been through herself. Maybe that's how her soul came into this world, but that's how she is. And I really respect that, because I do see a lot of people, when they kind of get into the upper stratosphere of any achievement in life, lose their way a little bit. But I can safely say that hasn't happened with Temple. And
I went to the Unity campus to give my talk, and I was really kind of blown away. I've talked at a lot of venues across the country, but this was just such a beautiful place. I mean, it's not one of these places where you go on Sunday and you hear a little sermon and then you split. You can go there any day of the week. It's like a sanctuary, like a refuge. They have a wonderful little restaurant, vegetarian restaurant there. They have rooms where, you know, they teach, where you can meditate, and they have one of the most sophisticated stages and sound setups that I've been to at any one of the venues I've spoken at. What I'm trying to say is it was a very, very impressive physical campus. But what's even more impressive was the community, the large, diverse community that's grown up there under Temple's guidance and leadership. And we'll get in to that a little bit more. But maybe, Temple, maybe we can start off by you telling us, I mean, how did you get the Unity campus going and create such a large and vibrant spiritual community there? Because, you know, having been there, I can see there was a tremendous amount of effort, not just to, you know, the financing of creating the physical plant, but really attracting the people in the community that you have. Can you tell us a little bit more how all that came about?
You know, when I was a teenager, I had a poster in my room. And I remember you could shine the black light under it. You remember those? And it would glow. And it said, learn from the mistakes of others, for you may not live long enough to learn them all yourself. And one of the things I noted when I was a ministerial student, and I watched, you know, national known ministers, it was all about them. It was all about their name. It was all about what they stood for. It was all about their value of how important they were. And they had, you know, the people that assisted them or that were their team, they were so much less than, you know. And I made a promise to myself that that was not the kind of community, Peter, that I wanted to be a part of. I wanted to create it that everyone could achieve a level of being equal, that though I was the spiritual leader at any given time, somebody else could jump right in and fill in my shoes, and everybody would just keep right on going. Because it really troubled me when a lot of these iconic spiritual leaders in our world, you know, they would die or retire and the places would just fall apart. And I didn't want to put all those years into something that wasn't sustainable and that wasn't vibrant without me. I love it when I'm away and I'll watch our service online. And there's times I weep and I go, it's happened. You know, they're really fine without me. They've got this. And that's from intention. It's from putting a lot of work into it and effort. And, you know, allowing the consciousness, I love that you use that word as part of your show and part of your branding, but it does take time to build that consciousness that you get the right people, you know, but it's very exciting. And I appreciate that you notice the value because it's been a lot of intention. And one of the things about the New Thought movement that has bothered me is that it's, you know, it tends to say we're diverse, we're inclusive, but you go into so many of these communities throughout the world and they're all over 60 and basically white people, especially in the US. So it was with focus that we wanted to focus on all ethnic groups. And that means giving them leadership roles. Any diversity, that means they must play a part in it. It can't just be that you talk about it. It's got to be that it's evident, you know, in your community.
Yeah, I know how some of the things that you and I have spoken about in the past along this line are maybe not, you know, very popular, let's say, in the industry that we're in, because nobody likes to acknowledge the fact that ego still gets, you know, fairly rampant in there. But I think the importance of what you just said is that instead of building a community that is based around a figure that can collapse with a figure, what you're really trying to do is empower your audience, empower your parishioners to be spiritual leaders in and of themselves. It's like, you know, let's all become Christ, you know, instead of just
let's all become Christ, because you're exactly right. Because what happens often in these kind of communities is they talk great ideas. They tell people you're born to be great, you know, don't be afraid, step into your greatness, but they don't have anything for them to do. So often people leave, they go somewhere else to do something else or create their own thing, where my thing has been, you don't need to do that. You don't need to go somewhere and get a building and do your thing. Do your thing here.
Yeah.
Let's all benefit together. And it it's such a phenomenal thing when you tap into that synergy. And yes, I find it discouraging also when I am around some of my colleagues and they're just full of themselves. Yeah. And that is an area that I just I promised myself that I would never forget where I come from, because it is not I, but the spirit within me that does the works. I have to allow it, but my energy and my essence, I'm full of spirit rather than being full of myself.
And I think that shines through. And I think that's why Unity St. Petersburg has been, so phenomenally successful. It's because of that, the spirit of its leader. But, Temple, you're on top of so many things besides running the Unity campus. How do you maintain that energy level? I mean, particularly during this time of mass COVID depression and lethargy. And, you could even see by looking at you, I can see that shine and energy there. Tell us how you do that. It might help some of the rest of us, lift our spirits up.
Well, I think some of it with me is, is the shamanism. It's the, I really am into the practice of nature. And I believe that we get energy from nature and that we are one in the same. So I am deeply connected to outdoors, water. As you know, us living in a peninsula and you're being here as well, there's a vibration that comes from that. I think people living in the right place, whether you're mountain people or water people, I think that's very important. But I think for me is through the years, I have changed some of my beliefs about energy, because I believe that I play a part in preventive energy. I wouldn't say, Peter, I'm going to stay up 7 days in a row and look at me, I'm going to be just off the chart with energy. There's a respect towards energy, but I don't believe that I generate the energy. And I think that that's a very big difference between people in everyday life. I've been on many an airplane on Monday and people are going to, they're already talking about how tired they're going to be on Friday.
Yeah.
They are, right? They're projecting a faith and a belief in less than instead of more than. People act like they have energy rations. I've had a great week ahead, but then the grandkids
are coming
over. And then I got to do that. And so they start subtracting it. I don't produce my energy. It comes from infinity. It comes from wholeness. It comes from something that I'm drawing from myself. And I'm mindful to what I put my energy to. It's because it's never what we're doing. It's what we feel and believe energetically about what we're doing that either uplifts us or zaps us.
What is your personal meditation practice, and how does that play into what we were just talking about, the energy and kind of keeping yourself on course? How important is, or if a personal meditation practice, to you and kind of keeping an even keel and moving forward with all that enthusiasm?
Well, one of the things that my teacher used to say to me, if your discipline becomes like a chronic regimen, it may not still offer the space of an open heart. So for me, there's a number of things that it's about, what I put in my body. It's about what I eat. It's the diet that I take in. It's about what I allow or don't allow to eat at me. So it's that essence as well. But it's very important to me. I mean, once a day for sure, that I am connecting with this life. I am connecting with guides. I am connecting with spirits of other dimensions, and bringing forth that energy, because I really believe that ancestral and otherwise, that we have tens of thousands of people that have come before us, and they're all available for our energetic health and well-being, really.
So the takeaway from that is what your mental diet that you feed yourself is just as important as your physical diet.
It's just as important, yes.
So at this point, we're going to take a little break. You're listening to Quantum Spirituality on Dream Vision 7 Radio. I'm your host, Peter Canova, the 25-time award-winning author of Pope Annalisa and the First Souls Trilogy. We will be back shortly. Please don't go away. We'll be back with our guest, Reverend Dr. Temple Hayes.
The First Souls Trilogy, one of the most highly awarded fictional independent book series on the market, is a grand vision of human evolution. It chronicles the first spirit consciousness to enter the material world in three page-turning novels that introduce a new paradigm of reality based on genuine ancient wisdom and quantum science. These inspirational thrillers will force you to rethink the nature of the world in which we live. Visit the PeterCanova.com website for information and ordering. In a world facing annihilation, a miraculous African nun rises to become the first female pope through a web of war, murder, and betrayal. Loved by some, hated by many, she becomes the deadly target of Islamic terrorists and her own cardinals as she introduces a new vision that will either save humanity or accelerate its destruction. Four people must race against a nuclear holocaust to learn her astonishing secret. Pope Annalisa is available at PeterCanova.com, Amazon, and other online booksellers and bookstores worldwide.
What if dreams can diagnose your life? What if we can meet the love of our life in dreams? Join host Cat O'Keefe Canovas, the number one internationally best-selling author of Dreams That Can Save Your Life, written with Duke University medical doctor Larry Burke. Dreaming Healing is where we'll explore dreams, research, and interpret dreams from you, the caller. Dreaming Healing shows can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern, with live shows on the first and third evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Come live your dreams out loud with Kat.
How did life start on Earth, and why is there so much suffering? Are we living in a simulated reality like the characters in the Matrix movie? Do parallel dimensions exist alongside ours, influencing our experience? What are the mysterious dark energies that penetrate our universe? Peter Canova folds space and time to bring the twin bookends of ancient wisdom and quantum science into a single focal point, answering these and many other deep mysteries of the creation. Quantum Spirituality can be heard every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern and 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. See the show where past and present merge to show us our future.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back to Quantum Spirituality on Dream Vision 7 Radio. I'm Peter Canova. You can find out more about me at petercanova.com. That's PeterCanova.com. You can go to that website where you can also access the archived files of our previous shows. Please also, if you have any questions or comments, you can leave them either on the website or at my Facebook page, Peter Canova Author. We always welcome any questions and comments. So we're coming back with Reverend Dr. Temple Hayes, our guest for today. So Temple, you've authored some very helpful books. And can you tell me some of the key points you address in the book, When Did You Die? Eight Steps to Stop Dying Every Day and Start Waking Up. Can you give us some insights from that book for the listeners?
Absolutely. And those people that have an interest in increasing the energy in their lives, the book gives several steps and processes, you know, that you can use or that I've used that have really helped me, because that is a comment that people make when they meet me and they find out my age. They go, I've never met somebody that's your age that has as much energy as you do. So I know it works, the things that I talk about. You know, dying, often people think about that, Peter, as a one-time event. Dying can happen within a day, within a week, within a month. And so we are always pruning, if you will. We're letting go, we're dying away some old ideas, and we're allowing room for new things to come in. So I really, when I talk about dying in the book, When Did You Die? It's about energetically. It's about your spirit. It's about the space that you hold. It's another level in psychology would be, when the heck did you give up? Or when did you just start settling for ordinary when you're here to have a ridiculously amazing life? And so I give many steps and processes that and questions that people can ask themselves and one another to say, where am I less than? You know, where am I not showing up or doing the hokey pokey and I have my full self in? And I really love that kind of energy. And I was very grateful that in my 30s, I heard other people talk about that dying is not just one time. It's an ongoing thing. And so is being born. You know, I love to tell people, happy birthday. You know, your parents birthed you, but you allow yourself to be born over and over and over again. And that's evolution.
Yeah, with a Christian background, you know, we always were kind of told, you know, we get our rewards in the afterlife, we get our, you know, rewards in heaven. And the evangelical community speaks a lot about, you know, being reborn. I mean, I do think there is something to it. I think I agree with you. Being reborn is basically something we do while we should be doing while we're alive. It's changing a direction, and you know, in fact, I'm trying to remember, it slips my mind what the ancient Greek word was for it. I think it was to repent. I think the ancient Greek word for pentmatero meant changing directions. So, you know, it's sort of like if your life is really on a track that is very not productive, and then something happens to you, day that, you know, you wake up, you know, you have a change of heart, and that change of heart leads you to seek out different things. And then when you seek for something different, you become something different. That's really being reborn, you know, while we're still alive. So the time to repent or the time to be reborn really is while we're still in body. And then things I believe probably just get better in the afterlife, because of the work you do here. At least that's my personal view of it. But yeah, I very much agree with your view about what it is to be reborn. And, you know, that brings up another thought that so many people come to spirit or come to consciousness because they're suffering. Suffering is one of the key things that kind of serves as a spark. And I guess in a way you could say there's a silver lining to every cloud. And I think that when you kind of hit bottom at a point, a lot of people, unless they just want to pack it in right there, say, you know, I can't go on like this anymore. You know, there has to be a better way. There has to be something different. We all have different forms of moving back up. Some people will become, you know, let's say evangelical or born again Christians. Some people will go to AA. Some people, you know, it will take different forms. But again, I don't put a judgment on any of that. I think that's all good because it means a change of direction. They don't have to all become like you or like me or whatever. They just have to change direction to go from, you know, south to north, let's say. Yeah. And I think that's really important. You had in your life a lot of adversity and personal suffering and traumas to lead you where you are today. And I think some of those things you expressed in a very moving segment in a book called Crappy to Happy, which was compiled by Kat Canavas, who is another host on our Dream Vision 7 radio network. If you would, I think, could you relate a little bit of your personal story and how to you came to be where you are to others? I mean, I know sometimes it's reliving painful memories, but I think it's very inspirational.
No.
I think it's very inspirational. Okay. Well, yeah, I think it's very inspirational, helpful to people. So if you could tell us a little bit about that, I would really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I think that's why we have stories, is so we can share them. I think we have these stories, they become our delicious friendships. You know, because every time we look at them from a different set of eyes and a greater open heart. So suffering. So when we look at people that are suffering, it's because they're not being authentic, or there's been a change that's been requested that has not been answered. And that is part of the suffering modality. That being said, I was born in a small town with big hearts, but very small-minded, deep-rooted Southern Baptist community. And when I was 10, my mother was taken away from our family for an alleged affair. And that was very chronic and tragic for our family. And our family was never the same after that, nor was she. So that was that first level of abandonment and lack of trust. And then when I was 13 and a half, my family discovered that I had an inappropriate relationship with a 17-year-old girl. And so that moment was a defining moment in my life, because the way people looked at me, Peter, was different. The way they saw me, the room, when I would enter the room with my family or my aunts, got quiet. Because my grandmother told me at 13 and a half, I'm so sorry, I'm not going to get to spend heaven with you. You're going to hell based upon the life that you've chosen to live.
That's tough for a young woman to hear.
It's very tough. And, you know, and I'm thinking, I don't even have my driver's permit. You're already telling me, you know, that I'm going to go to hell. But yes, it was just so devastating to go from being people's favorite to being somebody's nobody. And feeling that vibration all around. So because of that abandonment, rejection, I'm no longer blaming. But then because of that feeling, I abandoned and rejected myself. You know, I went to take that drink intuitively. I got a no, but I did it anyway 15 years. So I abandoned and rejected myself. But I've told my story. And I have been anonymous. I have been telling my alcoholic story since I was in my 30s about how, you know, I survived myself.
Well, you know, I think that almost everybody has what I call a traumatic defining event in their life. For you, it was the situation with your mother. I've had my own, which I won't recount here because this isn't my story right now, but I think we've all had those, you know, those moments, and it alters the course of our life. You know, it will either alter it for the better or the worse. You can, you know, you can either let these things destroy you, or you can, you know, somehow, you know, find the path, you know, the path, whether you believe the path upward is spiritual or conscious or not, it is, because if you're going upward, it's a spiritual event. I just want to remind you that you can listen to the show online, in phone or in cars. If you have any questions or comments, please visit my website, petercanova.com. That's PETERCANOVA.com, where you can learn a lot more about my work, my books, and you can access the archived episodes of Quantum Spirituality. Now, Temple, I remember a quote from you that I thought was very interesting, and maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit, because I think it might be instructive for some people. It was something like, to wish upon a star is progress. To know you are one is evolution. Let's address this from a consciousness perspective. What did that mean? Explain that a little bit more to our listeners.
Well, you know, that's very Disney, isn't it? To wish upon a star, makes no difference where you are. You know, that wishing and the hoping that our lives will turn into something, and it's more of an external thing. To know you are a star, to know you were sent at this particular time, at this part of our humanity, for a particular reason, is a very powerful thing, because then you're owning, you're not looking for something outside of yourself to be a great validator. You're seeking to know what is inside of you and who you are. And so that's what's evolution. It's because with every generation, we bring gifts, we bring resources, we bring a different level of wisdom. And it's so important that we be who we are in that way. When I spoke at Carnegie Hall for the Christmas Eve message last year, I was saying how that when I was 19 and still drinking, someone talked me into getting a tattoo, and I got a crescent, moon, and star. Well, let me tell you, getting tattoos back then wasn't cool. People didn't do it, okay? And so I go home, and my aunt sees this tattoo on my arm, and she said, "What in the world have you done? That's the Islamic satanic sign, and you're going to get that cut off your arm immediately." Well, obviously, I didn't. But years later, Peter, I spoke at an AA conference, and a man wanted to gift me with a token to say thank you. And he had gone online and bought me the image of the way the stars were aligned on the day that I was born. And it was a crescent, moon, and star. So, right? So I was drawn and resonated to that. That was me. And that is the key for everyone, is to release, you know, having belief systems just like your parents, just like the community, just like that, just like this. But to really seek, knowing that you are a star. And a star, we're not talking celebrity-itis, we're talking a star of creation.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess we have time for about one more question. And I've heard you in the past make a distinction between knowing and knowingness. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, well, you look at all the data. I mean, you could ask any question you want to know, and you go on Google or you go on a search engine, and there's your 32,000 answers about the same thing. And that's, we develop our minds that way. We develop our intellect that way. But there's a knowingness. And knowingness draws from wholeness. It draws from universal. It draws from the intuitive aspect. To give you a practical example, is I was seeing a woman on Zoom one night who was wanting to talk to me about her depression. So if I was coming from my knowing, Peter, I could have talked to her about depression. I could have talked to her about the red food. I could have talked to her about shamanic practices she could do towards her depression. But my knowingness invited me to go deep inside myself and to listen underneath what the woman was saying. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, "Your depression, what I'm getting is that your depression is about 85% not yours. It's your mother's." And she just started weeping buckets.
And she you were making an intuitive rather than a rational connection.
Knowingness to listen to her on a level of what she wasn't saying. And I didn't know her. I didn't know her mother. I just was going with the knowingness. It's when we are tuned in and turned on, you know, to a different level.
That reminds me of the ancient Gnostics and the distinction they made about the word to know. There's a knowing, like, well, you know, kind of like we learn rote facts. Okay, we remember things and we learn, you know, rote facts. But that's just sort of an intellectual or analytical thing. But then there's a knowing that comes from experience. It's I always say it's the difference between someone telling you the fire burns and putting your hand in the fire and feeling the heat. Yeah. The Gnostic, which means knowing, incidentally, Gnosticism means those who know, really we're talking about an experience of consciousness or spirit that allowed them to understand connectedness and see beyond the apparent, which is what you just did in that example. You went beyond the apparent and you really kind of immersed yourself in her connectedness with you, and you know, were able to give her that kind of information. But that's actually what this show is all about. It's all about consciousness, and it's about the fact that there is really one master consciousness. And we're all variations. It's kind of like the great river, and we're all tributaries, of that river. We participate in the creation and the maintenance, of the world around us, whether we are aware of it or not. We participate in it. We're not the sole determiners of that, but we certainly are. We certainly can determine to a large extent what we personally experience, using our consciousness. And I think what you just did was a good example of how you connected with that unity, and you were able, in essence, to be so empathetic with another, with another human being. It's connecting with that consciousness, I think, that allows you or allows any of us to do that.
I wish that more counselors and therapists and spiritual leaders would come from that wellspring, that dwelling place, when they work with other people, because often people just treat the facts of what they're hearing. A lot of times the gift is in what isn't being heard, and that's a practice. It's a clarity of practice of doing your work that way.
Well, Temple, I could probably go on with you for another couple hours, but we've reached the end of our show today. a big thanks to our producer, Bob, and please join us the first Tuesday of every month on Quantum Spirituality. This show will be archived on the Dream Vision 7 radio network, my website there, which can be accessed through my website, petercanova.com. So until next time, please join us again for Quantum Spirituality, the show where the past and the present merges to tell us about our future. Thank you very much. And thank you, Tim.
This ends today's segment of Quantum Spirituality, the show where the past and present merge to show us our future. Join us the first Tuesday of each month for cutting-edge information and informative new episodes. This show will be archived on the Quantum Spirituality Dream Vision 7 Radio Network website page, also accessible at petercanova.com. That's PETERCANOVA.com. This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.